You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
Welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 237th edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 754th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of December 2nd, 2021. I am your host, the coach, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call, how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Smart takes a shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
This week's banner moment occurred in the Syracuse game when, after a really subpar first half, the Indiana Hoosiers made some adjustments, came out firing on all cylinders, and was able to get back in the game and eventually lose in double overtime. But even in that, they were down again 7-8 points late in the game and were able to fight their way back. It's a banner moment even in defeat, because in previous years under previous regimes, this team generally would have a lull and then that would be it for the game, and there would be long droughts and the game would get out of hand and end early. I think we can be very proud of this Indiana Hoosier team, excuse me, even in defeat, in the fact that they found ways to compete in multiple times throughout that game. And that can only bode well going forward in what's going to be a tough Big Ten conference season. If they can build on that and eliminate their mistakes, we're going to have a lot to be proud of as Indiana basketball fans. Okay, let me introduce my esteemed co-host for tonight. First up, to my left, it's the man who used to speak about Robert Johnson like Jimmy Dykes speaks about Buddy and Jimmy Boeheim. He's also one of the world's most renowned bracketologists.
The best of you sports coaching, you know that we got him. When it comes to analytic trends, you know he can spot him. For first class bracketology, if you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top.
And right off the top, we are going bottoms, right to Andy Bottoms for his thoughts on Tuesday's game at Syracuse. He wasn't on the post-game show. Andy, your thoughts about this week in Indiana basketball?
Yeah, it was funny. I had to go to Mallory's practice, and so we saw the beginning of the game. Not in my thoughts did I think that when we'd come back home after an hour and a half practice, I'd still be able to catch the end, but there we were. So I was at least able to watch the second overtime, and disappointing to see the end result, and kind of a weird journey to get from what you thought the game might be, how it unfolded at first, to how it ended up in the end. And so I think it's one of those where you can, if you want to be positive about it, you can. If you want to take the negative about it, you can. And I think I probably fall somewhere in the middle. You're just not going to be able to get off to those kinds of starts and value the ball that little in that situation. And I think some of that could be, we can nitpick the schedule and it was set up the way it was for a certain reason, but you walk into that environment as your first road game. I'm not sure that's a great recipe for success with the group of guys who hasn't played together a ton, but you know, still no excuse for some of that. And I would say, like you did though, impressed that they came back and just got to get more from the bench. That was really one of my major takeaways from it. More so even, maybe not more so, but kind of up there with the turnovers, because I think some of the mistakes that you saw at various points in the end was just guys being super fatigued and having to rely on so few guys that you couldn't really get yourself over the hump. And I know Syracuse wasn't playing a ton of guys either and all those kinds of things, but I think if you get a little bit more lift from some of the guys off the bench, you're a little more well rested, and maybe it doesn't get to the point that it did. And I think that just led to some of those contributed to some of the breakdowns, because by the end the defense in the second overtime, those, they stopped them on the first possession. They scored every other possession of the overtime. And some of that's fouling at the end, but, you know, gave up 15 points, I think, in the second overtime I think some of that's just tired legs and not being able to get where you need to be defensively and really being able to close the game out. So I know we'll talk more about it, but overall encouraged by the fight that they showed to come back. As you said, a lot of teams in that same position in recent years, a 15-point lead becomes a 25 or a 15-point deficit becomes a 25-point deficit pretty fast. And you're just playing out the string to wait till the clock runs out. So glad to see that that didn't happen, but need to see a little bit better start, a little bit better focus to start the games as you go forward for sure.
Absolutely. To my right, to the bottom, however you're viewing this, is a gentleman who has a well-earned reputation on this show for submitting very mediocre mailbag questions, but spectacular over and unders. And we're going to have both, I think, tonight or go back over some of these or maybe combine it. And he's now forbidden by us from attending any more Indiana road games in person because he is 0-4-17, I think, or something like that on road games. He is Jay Horry. Jay, you were there in the Carrier Dome, flew out to see the Hoosiers. What were your impressions from the Carrier Dome Tuesday night?
Oh, thanks for that intro, Coach. Yeah, the I think my streak goes back to March of 2012, the game against Penn State in the Big Ten tournament when Verdell blew out his ACL. So I think that's I think I quit counting how many games I'm at now on my losing streak. But it needs to end, and it has to end at some point, right? So we got up early on Tuesday morning, flew out to New York. First time ever being in Syracuse. I was telling Coach before we started recording that it's an interesting town. It reminds me of kind of a worse Evansville. No offense to Evansville, but it's, there's water, there's a school there, and then there's just really not much else. And the Carrier Dome is kind of just dropped in the middle of campus with no place to park around it and makes it very hard to get to. But cool place to see a basketball game. Wasn't really surprised by how the game started in the first half. I mean, as Andy mentioned, you're taking a group of guys who haven't played together a lot. You're putting them in a hostile environment. You're putting them in a huge dome. And you're asking them to go against a defense that is pretty unique in college basketball. So it wasn't at all, especially, and then Syracuse comes out, hits a couple shots to start. We obviously got rattled and it kind of snowballed from there. Was very impressed with how they bounced back in the second half. And I know we have a whole segment about this, so I'm sure we'll get into the details, but the resiliency the team showed, I think, is something that it's really been missing in the program for the last handful of years. So that was great to see. Most of the people that we sat around were jerks, so that was not surprising considering we were in New York. But happy to be here with you guys and so in a little friendlier environment, and let's get into it.
Are you sure about that? We've all been called jerks or worse at some point. Here's what we're going to cover this week. We're going to talk a little more about the IU-Syracuse game here in segment one and segment two. We're going to talk about Big Ten, how IU fits into kind of a confusing Big Ten structure right now. And then segment three, we have a lot of good questions between the Discord channel and the community. We have a lot of good questions, and all of that is coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. This edition of Assembly Call Radio is presented by our friends at Homefield Apparel. As you think about what Christmas presents to get your loved ones, make sure that your online shopping includes a trip to homefieldapparel.com. For the IU fans in your life, Homefield has the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison. And for fans of other college teams, Homefield probably has something for them too, considering their product line now extends to more than 120 different schools with unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it will be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through the Kelley School of Business. What could be better than that? Go to homefieldapparel.com. Use our promo code HOME for 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME, H-O-M-E, for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team.
Did you just order another shirt from Homefield Apparel?
Man, I can't get past Mrs. Tonsoni. I keep buying these shirts from Homefield Apparel, and I would suggest that you too get a nasty message from Mrs. Tonsoni for buying too many Homefield Apparel shirts. So we're going back now to the IU-Syracuse game takeaways. I know there's been some reaction to Ryan's rant. We'll just, I guess, say that Everyone's entitled to their opinion. I think Ryan's rants are great, and they bring us to some reality. But I'm interested in your guys' take on the turnovers. Focus on that. We got a lot of questions, and Twitter has been a couple games now in the 20s, one against pressure defense, one against zones. Is this the turnover percentage and the turnover rate is concerning, obviously concerning. Is that something that you think is going to come down naturally, or is this something we are going to have to overcome in order to continue winning? I'll start with you, Andy. Your thoughts on Indiana's recent turnover issues.
I think it can get a little bit better, but I don't think they're going to move. The pendulum's going to swing way too far the other way. I thought Coach Adrania did a really good job in his film room. He showed some of the ones that Race made from the short corner when he was getting the ball there, and kind of the differences in the passes he was making there versus when he would get it at the free throw line or at the elbow. There was a pretty stark difference in some of that. But I think a lot of it's going to tie back to who your primary ball handlers are. And you've got Xavier Johnson, who can be electric but erratic at the same time. We've seen some of the good and the bad of that, not even just from a turnover perspective, but he's kind of mercurial, I would say, at this point, that we can probably agree on that. You got Lander, who's still young, still learning, is still trying to get the game to slow down a little bit. You know, the turnover in the second overtime that ends up getting charged to him is kind of a high pass from Race, but Lander is trying to catch the ball and throw it to a wide open Parker Stewart at the same time. So it's, he sees the play developing, just not at a point yet where he can kind of do all the things that he wants to do. So I think he is going to be inherently a little bit erratic and turnover prone. And then you've got Rob, who's still kind of working his way back, but he's had issues a little bit more the other way of being too conservative and not doing some of those things. So I think when you look at who's going to have the ball in their hands the most, even though other guys are pushing the ball on the break and doing things like that, the way the offense is run now, I just don't know that any of those guys is the true, the right mix of stabilizer, but while still being aggressive. And so I think that's going to lead you to a little bit of that. And some of it, I think, is also just trying to get guys to play faster, but comfortably. And some of the plays even that Race made in the game are just trying to do things too fast. At least that was how I felt watching it back. So I don't think it's going to get dramatically better. I don't think it's going to be that bad. If it is, we're probably in for a long season. But I think it can get incrementally better, but I don't think it's 100% solvable based on the personnel.
Jay, you were there. You saw the turnovers go. If it wasn't for them, I think Indiana walks away with a little bit easier victory, or a victory at least, without the turnovers. What did you see from courtside?
Yeah, so it was interesting, and I think I agree partly with what Andy said, and then I disagree with some of it. You know, I think part of it is that you have a bunch of guys who haven't played a lot together, and it's hard to replicate what's happening in game and practice, and so that's going to be part of it. You also have, as Andy mentioned, you have Rob Tennessee, who is going to be a primary ball handler, and he's missed a few games. He was obviously working back through the injury in the Syracuse game, and you know the Syracuse defense is just, it's really interesting to watch in person. Just they all move as one. You know, anytime a ball hits the floor inside of the 3-point line, they have guys swarming. You know, it's easier for guys to get really flustered in a game like that, especially playing on the road. I'm not overly concerned about the turnovers. I mean, I guess it kind of depends on what your expectation is. You know, I'm expecting the team to be in that, you know, 10 to 15 turnovers a game. And I don't think that's terrible, especially if they're playing up tempo and they're playing quick and making stuff happen and attacking. I mean, I don't think we're going to have a team that's averaging, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 turnovers a game. I don't know that that's possible. And not very few teams do that in college basketball, unless you're playing a super slow offense like Wisconsin or Virginia or something like that. So, again, I think it's something that can be worked out. And I think Woodson, you know, said before the season started, their expectation was 12 or fewer a game. And I think that's aspirational. But I think it's, you know, somewhere in that 10 to 12 or 12, 10 to 15 range is doable for this team. I'm not buying that it's going to be a year long problem.
You know, the one thing that we look at absolute numbers, too, I think there was, what, 26 assists? I don't have the box score up right now, but I think Indiana had 26 assists. And in Xavier Johnson's situation, he had 9 assists to 3 turnovers. That's 3-1. That's pretty good for a college guard. Would you like to see those 3 become 1 or 0? Absolutely. It was interesting. The Syracuse game was a post-turnover barrage. I think between the 3 guys, I don't know if Durr had any, but Geronimo came in and had 2 or 3 right away. But I thought there were 15 of the 25 or 26 turnovers were your 4 and 5 spots. And that shouldn't happen. And maybe that was just, as Jay said, the zone. The issue where I agree with Andy is Xavier Johnson's had turnover problems his whole career, and it seems like early in the game he gets going really fast and has 2 or 3 turnovers right away and then settles into the game a little bit. And we all know, you know, Rob's issues at times. Rob's been a good assist to turnover guy too, but and then 2 of the first turnovers were drives in offensive fouls too. So my hope is I still think this is a concern and it's a worry. I don't think I feel comfortable with it until we see multiple games of being in that 12, 13 turnover range and Xavier and people making better decisions. So I think this is a big issue, which will affect the number of wins that Indiana has. I don't foresee Indiana being in the 20s in turnovers, or their percentage has to be, what now, 25, 26% almost of their possessions on KenPom turning the ball over. You cannot win games if you don't get shots. So it obviously, I think, is concern number one coming out of the Syracuse game for Indiana to try to get fixed. Jay, anything else? Your thoughts when TJD went down? I mean, my goodness, that was a few minutes there of just this can't be happening, right?
Yeah, it was. That was a weird situation. I mean, we were right next to the student section, and so they were kind of giving TJD crap while he was on the ground, and then we're booing him when he came back in and all that kind of stuff. You know, which is their students, whatever. But yeah, that was, and we couldn't, they didn't show a replay inside the stadium. So I had no idea. And from, I got on my phone, one of the few times I was on Twitter during the game, just to see what people were saying. And from, I quickly realized it seemed like just kind of a knee to knee, thing. So once I saw that, and you know, we were kind of directly across from the bench. And so I could see him kind of jumping and running around kind of up and down the tunnel, trying to make sure everything was okay. And once I saw that, you know, it was probably maybe 2 or 3 minutes where I was expecting the worst, just because you see a big guy go down with a knee injury, because we were on the opposite end of the floor of where it happened. And so it was very scary, but, you know, luckily Twitter helped me out on that one.
Andy, what's the major positive takeaway that you had? We've talked about the comebacks a little bit and all that, but as you watch the game and a couple days away, what's something you think Indiana can build on from the Syracuse game?
I think 2 things come to mind for me immediately. One is just the resiliency of being able to know that you can fight back in that situation and get yourself back in the game, you know, multiple times, not just coming back from being 18 down, but, you know, late in the game, they're down 11 with 3 minutes and 44 seconds left. I had jotted down, and they end up scoring 14 points in the last 6 possessions to tie the game and force the overtime. So I think those things are good. I think from an individual standpoint, it goes back to a lot of Parker Stewart, Miller Kopp for me. One, getting those guys some confidence, but also the reassurance that you've got some guys who can knock down open shots when you need them. And I thought Parker just has such a sweet stroke and was really locked in there early in the second half, getting IU, you know, really coming out of the locker room, getting them back, getting it close quickly to get it back to where you had the balance of the second half to kind of whittle the rest of the lead away. And then Cap, one, playing a ton of minutes, but also being another guy who can knock down open shots, hitting those, none of those 3 free throws, I don't think even touched the rim there in a pretty key situation. So I think, you know, there were some questions about how, you know, and what they did that game is not what you can expect every game, but I think knowing that they're capable of that, and I think the confidence that comes with those kinds of performances for them should pay dividends here as IU gets closer to the Big Ten season. I think you know what you have in Trace. He's been better even than everybody thought but the supporting cast has to be able to really step up and take some of the pressure off him from time to time. And those two guys in particular really stepped up on Tuesday night.
And you make a good point too, because as you look at the makeup of this team, you're going to have to double the post. And if we can pass the ball out without turning it over, we're going to be able to make teams pay on most nights. That has now been demonstrated. A 40% shooting from three. We really shot the three better than the beloved Boeheim from the announcers. Indiana shot a better three-point percentage, 40% to their 37, 38, I believe. That's going to be exciting to watch offense, because you have a guy in Xavier Johnson who can beat people downhill. Eventually, when Tamar gets defensively aware, he's going to be able to get some downhill drives. They do miss that with Trey Galloway. I saw someone in the chat say, do you think Galloway could have helped only in drive penetration of the zone and his passing? I don't know if that makes a huge difference. But Indiana has some ability to throw the ball inside, to drive the ball with X if he takes care of the basketball. To me, two things come out of Syracuse. One, you got to take care of the basketball, and two, can you guard the drive? You know, they got bullied on some drives by some good basketball players, but you got a Nebraska team coming in that has some really quick athletes, and they're going to spread you out, five out and that, and they're going to drive and kick for threes. Hoiberg's really good. Can Miller Kopp, can Parker Stewart, can Xavier Johnson, that first unit, can they guard the bounce? Those are the two concerns that I have going forward. Jay, let's talk a little bit defensively before we end this segment. Your thought about the Hoosiers' defensive effort. It looked like it was two distinctly different types of defenses depending on what half you were watching.
Well, that was on offense and defense, I think.
Yeah, true. But,
you know, you know, and again, I think a lot of that first half was just kind of a everything kind of going wrong at once and just trying to fight their way through it. You know, one thing I love about this group of guys, this team, now that I've seen them in person a few times, they are a confident bunch. I mean, even when things were going wrong in the first half, nobody was hanging their head. You know, they were pumping each other up. They were getting back to the huddle. They were trying to work through it. And that was something I feel like we really missed in the Miller era, where once things went wrong, they turned to the coach. You know, they were always looking back at the coach, asking what they should do next. This group really goes to each other. They build each other up. And they do not, I mean, just look at the way that they played in that second half. They do not lack confidence. They came out at halftime and said, we're going to give it our best shot. We have a chance to win this game. I'm not sure anybody else believed that at that point, but they definitely came out and played like that in the second half. And, you know, and you make a few shots in offense, all of a sudden your defense looks better. I mean, everybody's competing a little harder on defense. You know, everybody's picking themselves up. So, you know, I think this team's confidence is going to take them a long way. And that's something, I think, to be a good basketball team in the Big Ten, you're going to have bad halves. You're going to have, you know, a bad 5-minute stretch. You got to be able to bounce back. These guys really seem like they're buying into not only the coaching staff, but they're really buying into themselves.
Andy, your concerns about IU's defense going into the Big Ten opener, the opening two games, and then the Crossroad Classics and the rest of the non-conference. What do you see that's a concern? I feel there's a couple areas.
Yeah, the one that stood out to me, and it really has been a challenge in the last two games with Tavion Kinsey of Marshall, and then with more so Buddy Boeheim, I felt like in this game, is just it's one where you really, I mentioned the bench earlier, you really need Geronimo to be able to come in and play defense on some of these wings. There really just isn't a natural fit for this team to do that. Parker Stewart's been challenged to do that a lot. And I think he has, you know, is a fighter on the defensive end, but has some limitations. I think I brought up the same thing after the Marshall game. And so you saw Kinsey do that. You saw Boeheim and especially that second overtime, once, you know, Stewart fouled out, you know, they tried Scoot Bates on him. He just isolated him on one side of the floor, back him down. Then you put Kopp on him, you put a bigger player, he drives him. And so I think they've got to figure out a way. Like, Geronimo certainly has the length and the ability to do that. He's got to be able to keep himself on the floor by how he's playing on the offensive end and from a defensive awareness standpoint. And, you know, like I said, I think Tony's gone into some of that in the film room stuff just in terms of what he did. But I think he's a guy who can fill that need. But right now, as you get into guys like that, that is a challenge. So as you look forward to, you know, spinning that forward a little bit over these next couple games, you go play, you know, you're playing Nebraska at home. Alonzo Verge is there, you know, shoots a ton, high assist rate, but he's 6'3". There's probably guys who can guard him. But Bryce McGowan's is a freshman. He's 6'7", you know, wing player. Who guards him? How do you handle that? You play Wisconsin. Who's going to guard a Johnny Davis for them, who's played really well? I think those are things that we're going to look at over the next couple games, try to figure out, can somebody step into that role and really be able to step up defensively on the wing? Because those are the last two games. That's really what's killed them. And some of that is all wrapped up in what you said about really being able to contain dribblers. But I think from a size perspective, IU's kind of doesn't have a whole lot in that middle range. They got smaller guards and bigs, and it's who can defend in that wing area.
I think that's spot on. The you know, Stewart and Kopp fight like heck, but boy, they have some lateral issues that are hard. And we don't have a defensive stopper that's not a point guard. And our defensive stopper comes off the bench and has been injured in Rob Finnessy. So that will be something that'll be a lingering question going forward. And then the other thing that I would share with everyone, well, the ball screen issues too, but Syracuse is, whether you like Boeheim or not, he's been around for a while, so he knows some stuff. They were doing rescreen. They were doing a ball screen, and Indiana would fight over the top. Then they'd turn around and rescreen again, and that is it's hard to go over the top two times in a row, and they were then sitting down under the screen and hitting long threes. It's really a good strategy that was implemented by Syracuse, and that's really hard to guard. So I'm not totally worried about the ball screen defense because sometimes teams just choose the right thing and do so. But, you know, everyone's saying that Syracuse lost to Cornell, and you do those comparisons. And sometimes it's not the total record. It's, you know, when you play and where you play. And Syracuse had just been handed to them. They come back home. I'm sure they had some tough practices, and they were really focused, and it showed when they come out in the first half. But Indiana was, you know, no excuses for losing that game, though. The turnovers and the guarding the bounce, that Indiana should be better. But this is a learning process, and I think that Indiana will be okay going forward. So we're going to end session one here. And coming up on Assembly Call Radio, we'll take a look at the Big Ten with the December conference games on deck. And where does Indiana fit based on what we've seen so far? We discuss next on the Assembly Call.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This is Verdell Jones. What's better than an epic buzzer beater? The full court dribble and perfectly placed pass to set it all up. And, of course, celebrating with Hoosier Nation afterwards. So join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on an Assembly Call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Welcome back to the Assembly Call. And tonight I'm excited to announce that we have a new sponsor for the main segment of Assembly Call Radio. And just like all of our other sponsors, they started out as either friends of the show or IU diehards just like us. It's Superior Insulators, owned by longtime listener and IU season ticket holder Brad. With winter right around the corner, the timing is perfect to tell you about their high-performance insulation and air barrier systems for both residential and commercial. And you know their work is high quality because they have put the air barrier systems and spray foam in the IU Excellence Academy. They also worked on the IU football locker room, marching 100 hall, and many other buildings on campus. Visit insulators.com to learn more and schedule your appointment. That's insulators.com, insulators.com to learn more. And thank you, Brad, for your continued support of our show. Okay, it's now time to talk about the Big Ten, where the Big Ten sits right now. And how Indiana fits into the Big Ten. So let's get the evilness out of the way right away. And Andy, your thoughts on the Purdue Boilermakers as they rise to number one in the country and obviously number one in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they've really separated themselves from everybody else in the Big Ten, both by their play from a positive perspective, but from how the others have played from a negative perspective. And I you know, a lot of people had them, Michigan, Ohio State, Illinois, in a tier toward at the beginning of the season. I think Purdue's in its own tier right now is at least what it looks like to me. And then there's a drop off before you get to everybody else. But it's I don't want to belabor it because it's obviously not fun to talk about, but they've been really impressive. Played against some difficult teams, Villanova in particular, a really good team. Jury's still out for me a little bit on North Carolina, and Florida State's always tough to play against. I know they're missing some players, but they've been incredibly impressive and really established themselves as a team to beat in the league for sure.
Jay, your thoughts on Purdue?
They're good.
that's great. Okay, so if you we'll just take that answer and move forward. If you were a coach, Jay, one of the questions we got was how do you game plan against two high quality centers? So you got 40 minutes of high quality centers. You don't have a real backup coming in. How do you game plan to beat Purdue? What would you do?
Man, that's tough. Aren't you supposed to be the coach?
Yeah, but I'm the host tonight.
You're so. coming to me with that one. Okay.
I'll follow up, man, after all of your great observations.
He's got a page worth of scouting report that he's going to drop on us here in a minute and tell us why we're wrong. But yeah, go ahead, Jay. You first.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not need anything. When you have them on defense, I mean, you obviously have to attack their bigs and make them guard ball screens. They're obviously, especially if you're setting the screen with Trace, they're going to drop back and try to make him shoot over the top. You really got to get, especially the giraffe guy, you really got to get into his body and and hopefully get him in foul trouble. Really got to make both Williams and Edie guard on the perimeter. Hopefully that's the game where Trace's work on his jump shot really pays off, because, you know, you go back to some of those games last year when those guys were having to guard like EJ Liddell, players like that, who could pick and pop and really stretch the floor. I mean, I think it was the Big Ten tournament where Liddell basically played Edie off the floor. So, yeah, I mean, that's something like that. And then on the defensive end, I mean, if they're going to shoot 43% from three, I mean, they're just not going to lose very much. I don't think that holds up for the whole year. The point guard, was it Thompson, who's never been a good shooter in his life and is shooting like 60% from three so far this year. So I think they cool off a little bit, but you know, they're good. They're really good. They're the best team in the Big Ten by far. They're probably playing the best in the country right now. So it's going to be great. It's going to be really great to see them screw it up somehow. I'm looking forward to that part.
Andy, what would you do? You know, you're a coach, game plan for the Boilers.
I think what Jay said about making the big guys for Purdue really play some defense and trying to get them out on the perimeter as best you can is the way to go from that perspective. I think on the other end, you harken back. I don't know if this is a viable strategy at this point, but I think back to IU playing LSU with Shaq in the tournament, and they basically said, I'm going to make it as hard as he can to score, but if he gets his, then so be it, and then figure out how to take other guys away. Because – those guys are gravitational in terms of what happens when the ball gets inside of them, and that contributes to them. They've got good shooters, but it also contributes not all that different from what we were talking about with Trace earlier, where, you know, he's going to get double teamed, and if he's good enough to pass to the right guys and you've got good shooters out there, things get tough quick. So I think to a certain extent, you're not going to be able, particularly with Edie, if you can't play him off the floor on the offensive end, he's probably just going to get his, and you try to keep other guys from going off, try to run him off the 3-point line, so you're not getting just blown up playing it that way.
I think Purdue's Crypt tonight is a real athletic team that can drive and have great pace. A Baylor, that kind of team. For Indiana to do it, I think they need to run. You get Edie running up and down the floor, try to beat him down the floor and drive him. You're going to have to tell Trace, get the ball and drive at him and go by him with your athletic ability, find an angle, use the rim as protection. A lot of stuff that you guys have already said I think is very, very important. And Andy, I would do exactly what you said. You took the words right from my mouth. I would let Edie score all the time and try to beat him with some, you know, physical, push him off the block to where he's turning into you and trying to force a shot. He's not just turning around and dunking and lock in on their 3-point shooters. The problem is they run really good stuff and probably the best cutting team in the country as far as how hard they cut and multiple handoffs and DHOs and all that kind of stuff. So easier said than done. But if I could prevent them from going crazy on the three and just let it be a two-point game and let the posts go, that's probably where I would go with Purdue. So enough talk of that. This is the Indiana show. We went way too long on that. But who's next in the pecking order? Kathy Amos asks a question. Now that we've seen a few weeks, what are your current Big Ten power rankings? Of course, Coach Adranya and Marlo and I put out a ranking. We'll put out another ranking on Monday, so Kathy, you can check it there. But interesting to get your guys' take. Who's the next two or three teams besides Purdue, Jay, in your Big Ten power rankings?
Man, that's tough. You know, I was just looking at pulled up the T rank right now. Purdue's second, Michigan State's 18th, IU's 21st, Illinois's 22nd, Michigan's 23rd, Iowa's 25th, Ohio State's 26th, Wisconsin's 33rd. So there's a group from Michigan State there to Wisconsin, which is, you know, what, seven teams. And I think you could just pick any order out of that right now, and I wouldn't be completely shocked. I'd probably put Ohio State and Michigan State maybe kind of in that next two and three. And then, you know, Michigan's has looked very bad. Their point guard play has been awful. Dickinson, when he doesn't have three guys that can shoot and drive next to him, he's looked very bad, especially on the defensive end. He hasn't been able to guard anybody on the pick and roll. Iowa, shocker, is playing good offense and can't really guard anybody. And Illinois, I'm not really, we kind of said before the season where I don't know how you really replace what everything Io did for that team. So, you know, I think IU's right in that mix with those seven teams, and, you know, wouldn't be shocked to see any of those teams finish in any particular order.
Andy, what's the next pecking order in the Big Ten?
I'd probably put Ohio State and Michigan State in that conversation. I think when you look at them, Michigan State's only two losses came against two of the better teams in the country in Kansas and Baylor, and they weren't. You know, both those are by double digits, so take that for what it's worth. But they did have beaten UConn. Loyola Chicago's pretty good. They beat Louisville, handled them pretty well last night. And I think they'll get better because they had they got a number of new pieces, so I think they'll get better. And then Ohio State, Justice Suing's been out. They've had some injuries, and it's Cedric Russell. A lot was expected of him when he came over from Louisiana, and he hadn't really done anything until he played Duke, and that was his best game. So maybe it's just taken him a little bit to get acclimated to what they're doing there, but he was huge in that game, and Liddell's playing as well as anybody right now. So I guess I would lean those two. I'm not buying Iowa. They nearly gave up a huge lead to Virginia, albeit at Virginia, but to let a Virginia team that really struggled to score pretty much score at will over the second half of that game, I think tells you Iowa kind of is who we thought they were. Wisconsin's the one I can't quite peg yet. Maybe it's just not wanting to admit that they could be. so much better than anybody thought they would be. But, you know, their only loss came when Davis wasn't out there. They won a lot of close games in terms of the, you know, the game against Houston. They got out to a pretty big lead, only ended up winning by two. St. Mary's game was close. Times last night when I watched them against Georgia Tech, wasn't overly impressed because I don't think Georgia Tech's all that good, but they did win that to clinch it for the Big Ten. So they're the one that I can't quite figure out. And then yeah, I would echo a lot of what Jay said about Illinois and Michigan and some of the disappointments there, and really trying to figure out whether those things are fixable or not. I think in both cases, the personnel losses are proven to be more tough to replace than maybe people would have expected. Just a matter of whether those things are fixable with the guys they got, or they have to be more, you know, kind of wholesale schematic changes to try to patch over the holes left by those guys.
I'm in agreement with you guys. For me, it's Ohio State and Michigan State right now, just because the quality of wins. I'm a bracket guy, so I look at resume more than I do anything kind of predicting rosters and things of those nature. So that would be the next two or three. And then, you know, boy, there have been some – add Maryland to the disappointing start so far. So you've had a few of those teams drop, and then you've had, you know, Iowa and Wisconsin kind of play better than what we thought early, but is their schedule, you know, that way. And then Iowa and Purdue play tomorrow night to start off the Big Ten. So I think you'll see some clarity there. So then the last question here in our main segment is, where does Indiana fit in? And we have a couple of questions in here. And the first one is, Andy, how many teams are clearly better than IU right now in the Big Ten?
Clearly, I would say Purdue is for sure. I think you could argue some of the others. I think to Jay's point, you get a lot of these teams, whether they've played better than you thought or worse than you thought. I don't know that there's a ton of separation. So probably what we thought were, you know, tiers, you know, we thought tier one had four teams in it before. Well, it's got one right now. And the rest of those teams and the three or four that you had in tier two are all probably right in a jumble at this point. So unfortunately, I guess, depending upon how you think of it, I don't think we've seen IU play enough quality opponents to really get a read for where they fit in that pecking order. But I think clearly better than them is one, potentially better than them, it's certainly more than one, but I just don't think we know quite enough yet.
Jay, you were cheating by putting up a finger there for the crowd that's watching. You agree with Andy, there's one team, correct?
Yeah, there's one team that's clearly better. We've talked about them way too much tonight, so but yeah, like I said, the next group of teams, I mean, you know, we're seven games into the season. I mean, who knows what that group of teams looks like, you know, and when the Big Ten really starts in January.
Yeah, I agree. There's one clearly. You go back to the next tier of Michigan State and Ohio State. I wasn't impressed with Ohio State until they beat Duke. And really, they were down by double, was it 6 or 7 late, and then scored the last 12 points or something like that, I believe, to beat Duke. So the sample size, we had a bracketology podcast. We're doing some live shows on Thursday nights, and we have a new bracket out. And it's just so hard to compare all these teams because of who they've played, and it's such a small sample size. So to say that I just can't say anyone but Purdue is clearly better, but there are some teams that potentially haven't played well that could be better. There's some teams that have played well that could be better, which leads us to the last question here from Jim Bernstein. I hope I pronounced that right. One of the two ways I pronounced that. Jim, we appreciate you and asking this question. I see that you've been in the chat tonight. After seven games, what are reasonable expectations? Have they changed from the preseason? Are they higher or lower than you thought? Jay, we'll start with you.
No, I mean, I think they're about where I said we'd be. You know, I think I said we'd lose one non-conference game. Planning on that being the Syracuse game. You know, this team was never going to be a finished product in November. I mean, and it was unrealistic to think it would be. I mean, I'm not sure anybody actually thought it would be. There was always going to be some growing pains. You're fitting together a bunch of new pieces. You have a whole new coaching staff outside of Kenya Hunter. These are just guys that are trying to figure out how to play together, and they're playing a new system. So I'm very encouraged by what I've seen so far. I'm really just a lot of the stuff that I like a lot that the most is not, you know, technically the X's or O's on offense or defense. It's just the way these guys carry themselves on the floor and the confidence with which they play. So I'm been pleasantly surprised so far. I don't think my expectations have changed. I still think we win 12 games or so in the Big Ten.
Andy, your thoughts on expectations, same, higher, lower, from preseason?
I think overall, when we talked a lot about expectations, it was being able to make the NCAA tournament. That still seems within reach for sure. And I think Big Ten wise, it was trying to get to 10, 11, 12 wins, which I think is attainable. I think the part that might have changed potentially for the better is I think a top four finish is more attainable now. And maybe that's less a function of how IU has played and more a function of how other teams have played. But I always felt like when we talked about that almost felt like a bridge too far because of what it seemed like some other teams would do. So that isn't to say that IU will finish there, but I think that's more attainable than it probably was in the past. And I think, you know, if you set a cutoff for where IU'd fit in the Big Ten, I think it'd probably be higher now than what it would have been at the beginning of the season based on how some other teams have played. But overall, I think pretty similar at this point for me.
Mine's been like the stock market, up and down. First game rant, not so happy. Then we play really great defense and think that we can hang our hat on defense. And then we don't play great defense at Syracuse and turn the ball. And now we're turning the ball over. So my expectations have been up and down. But the bottom line is a little bit better than preseason. I still think it's now maybe a 3-8 instead of a 5-8 finish in the Big Ten. I think we are. I'd be surprised to not be a tournament team, with the concerns of the turnovers and guarding the bounce. If those things don't get, you know, marginally better, then I think it's going to be a struggle. So I would say slightly improved expectations at this point.
And none of us actually mentioned that this team can shoot it a little bit.
A lot better, yeah. It's proven it. It's not just coaches saying we see it in practice. We've actually seen it in games. Andy, I'm going to come to you for Nebraska and Wisconsin. How does Indiana match up with those two teams, the next two games and our start of the Big Ten Conference?
Well, Nebraska is interesting. They are coming off of also a multiple overtime game, a 4-overtime game against NC State on Wednesday. So they'll be a little, probably a little tired as well. Maybe a little bit more tired than IU. You know, they're kind of what we've seen from them in recent years. They do want to play a bit fast, struggle, to a certain extent defensively and, are not shooting the ball well from 3-point range at all, this year. But they, you know, a lot of transfers, for them. Two guys to really know are Alonzo Verge, who came over from Arizona State. He's got a 45.7 assist rate right now as I look at it, but also shoots the ball on about 30% of the possessions that he's in the game. So he's going to be a focal point. And then Bryce McGowan is a talented freshman that they brought in. So those are kind of the two guys that'll be the focal points from an offensive standpoint. It's certainly a game at home that IU should win, needs to win, whatever you want to say. They haven't beat anybody in the top 200 in KenPom so far. For them. And then Wisconsin, like I said, I don't think anybody wants to say it from an IU fans perspective, but they've been impressive and better than I thought they would be. Their only loss came at home to Providence in the Gavitt games. But again, Johnny Davis missed that game and then he came back and was on fire in the Maui / Las Vegas event, which they ended up winning. So they've got a handful of solid wins already. They are pretty much your standard Wisconsin team at this point, trying to figure that out. But Davis is really the guy to stop there, and I think presents a tricky matchup for IU based on what we had what we had talked about earlier. So I think that one nobody has good memories of this team playing well in the Kohl Center in any time in recent memory. So that in and of itself, no matter how good or bad Wisconsin is, I think a lot of IU fans subconsciously just chalk up as a loss before it even starts. So I again, the way Wisconsin plays, they're not going to run away from you. It shouldn't really blow you out. And I think IU can hang with them. But again, it's a team you really got to be, you know, they run their stuff really well. And you really got to be attuned to the details defensively and not have some of the breakdowns that, we've seen in these last couple games. So I think the defense will probably tell the story in that one as much as anything.
All right. I'm going to end this segment by saying we win at Wisconsin. It's just time.
Well, hey, hang on, Jay.
I'm not going to the game. I'm not going to the game.
Okay. Now I'm for sure that Indiana's going to win. I'm going to make sure Jay comes to my house and doesn't even get near any spotted cow or anything that's related. No cheese in the house, nothing to keep Jay from really messing with the vibe. So coming up in our third segment, we'll answer your questions as we always do. Stick around with us here on The Assembly Call.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of The Assembly Call.
Welcome back to Assembly Call Radio. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, here with Andy Bottoms. Mediocre Jay, about to do his thing, joins us as well. And it's segment three, which is means one thing, and that we have questions from the mailbag, and we're going to start off with...
It's not that good, but it's not that bad. It's Jay's Mediocre Question.
The Mediocre Question is in the house tonight, the questionnaire. He's got a question for Andy and I, which I got to quickly kind of look at real quick. Jay, it's all yours.
All right, guys. I'm happy to be doing this live. All right, before the season, we made some over-under predictions and hopefully made some side bets, you know, and got some good stuff on the line. But, and I tried to drop the link in the chat. I don't know if it actually, if YouTube lets you put links in there or not. But the question is, if you could change one of your picks right now, which one would it be and why?
Andy, I'll let you go first.
I was going to say, I'll go first because I know, Coach, you said you were looking at it. I've been trying to look at him, too, here while we're on here. The one that I saw first was Tamar Bates points per game at 10. I took the over. I'd probably take the under. He's at 6.3 now. I think you've seen enough from some of the other guys that I don't know. He certainly will have games that he plays well and puts up those numbers, but I think over the course of the season that probably looks a little more difficult now maybe than I thought that it was based on what seems to have kind of settled on a starting lineup and trying to figure some of those things out. Also seems to be riding the starters pretty good as they go over the course of the game. So I guess I would say that one. I feel of the over-unders, that's the one. I think best three-point percentage I'd probably change too. I had Scoop for that one, but if we're sticking over-unders, I'll say that one was the one that stood out to me, at least initially.
I think for me, I'm going to go with the KenPom offensive efficiency under the 30 rank. I had under, thinking Indiana would be a top 30 offense. I think they're getting better offensively, but I don't know if they're going to make it for the season long, especially when teams start scouting and trying to shut down certain things. I haven't looked at KenPom today, but I know they're not anywhere close to that. They were at, what, the 40s, 50s, something like that. Does anyone have KenPom readily handy? But anyway, that's
why. They're 55 right now.
Yeah, 55 right now. So I think I'm a ways off after the start to the season. I think that's the one that I would go ahead and switch. Jay, do you have one?
Well, I didn't make picks, you know, because I was the host, you know.
Oh,
the house
right.
The house can't bet, you know. But let me look at what the chat mob picked and see if I'd change one for the chat mob. So the chat mob's got Stewart in the three pointer, which that looks pretty good. The chat mob also has the over in the offense, so they got that right so far. You know, probably the Tamar Bates points, although I think as Tamar gets more used to the game, he might play quite a bit more, and get some more points as we get into the Big Ten season. You know, I think Rob's minutes over 21.5, as Lander starts playing more and getting more of those minutes, I could see Rob being, you know, in that, you know, 18 to 20 minute range too.
All righty. There you go. That's not really a mediocre question. I kind of thought that one was pretty good, Jay. But we're not changing your name. But it's now time for our mailbag. All questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about at join at assemblycall.com/community. We got questions from our Discord channel and our community. So we're going to try to fire through a lot of these. And something new for the mailbag: if we use your question on air, you'll get rewarded with our new community coin, our home coin. Learn more about it by going to homecoin.fans. That's homecoin.fans, about our community coin. Go IU76 from the Discord asked this: do you see both Kopp and Stewart continuing to be more involved with offense like they did in Syracuse? We kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, Andy. Do you think their role is going to increase as the season goes on?
I think the Syracuse game is a bit unique just in terms of the, you know, the style that and the zone that they play. I mean, Parker Stewart took 12 threes in that game, so and made half of them, which is awesome given the last handful of years. But I would say, you know, I think the ways that they were used will continue, but I don't know that getting the volume of shots that they both got in that is something that was probably sustainable going forward. I think that's a little bit of a product of the game flow and the way Syracuse played, but I do think they're going to continue to be big parts of the offense. And like I said earlier, I think the confidence they gain from a performance like that puts them on a good trajectory going forward.
Jay, your thoughts about the usage of Kopp and Stewart going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it's going to depend on how teams try to defend us. If they try to play Trace one-on-one, Trace is going to get 40, and Parker and Miller are going to be, you know, not as involved in the offense. If teams start doubling Trace and having to bring, you know, weak side help and everything, that skip pass cross court, those kickouts from Trace to open shooters, that's going to be there. So, I mean, I think it's going to be kind of a game-by-game basis. However, you know, Stewart is the kind of scorer that has shown he can take the ball, score off the dribble, he can catch and shoot, he can do it a bunch of different ways. As he gets more accustomed to playing, I mean, we forget he didn't play basketball games for about 2 years. So as he gets kind of back into the flow of playing these big games, it wouldn't surprise me if he's creating a little more off the bounce.
I'm a big fan of both of those two gentlemen for a variety of reasons. I'm glad they're demonstrating the ability to shoot the basketball. I think they're going to be used a lot more, but I don't think they're going to get 12 shots at threes. If they do and hit six, we're going to be all right. Jeff asked, question for tonight's show: what level of turnover percentage, IU is currently around 21% turnover rate, would be acceptable to you in a system that Mike Woodson is trying to instill play a little more freedom? Andy, what's a good percentage for a winning Big Ten team, in your opinion?
Yeah, I was just kind of looking down the rankings here of where everybody is in KenPom at the moment. Yeah, if you're at 18%, you're right around 120th, so you're kind of in the top third of Division I teams. There's 358, I believe. So I feel like that's, you know, that's Ohio State as an example is at 18.0 right now. Even Purdue's at 17.9. So I think if you could get to that point, you'd feel pretty good. I think based on some of the personnel and the things that they have, to think this team is going to get down to 15% or something like that is just not realistic. And, you know, that's a good thing. The way the question is asked is just kind of like based on the style they want to play. I mean, that's where I think looking at these from a turnover rate perspective in terms of, you know, raw numbers is one thing, but looking at it as a percentage of possessions, I think is the better way to go. So I think if you get to 18, I'd feel fairly good about that. If you think about it, you know, typical game that shaves a, you know, few turnovers off of what a, you know, average game would be. And I think you could live with that. I think they're going to be, to Jay's point, I think he said 10 to 15. I think they're going to be a lot closer to 15 most games than not. But I think based on general pace that they're playing, that's not terrible.
And Jay, I'm going to come back. You kind of already answered this, but you do believe that Indiana will get down to 18% or lower turnover percentage, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about, you know, 18% is, I think, probably a good barometer. I mean, you look back at some of those cream teams that were really good, like the one that won the Big Ten in 2016, you know, they turned it over at 19.6% of possessions, but they had an incredibly high effective field goal percentage. You know, they were number one in the country in effective field goal percentage. You know, right now we're 13th in the country in effective field goal percentage. You know, you go back to the 2013 season, you know, the number one seed, we turned it over at 19.2%. So, you know, these things are all kind of, they're all kind of relative, as long as you're not having the games like Syracuse game where you're turning it over 25 times. If you're staying in that, you know, 10 to 15 to whatever, I mean, if you're in that 17 to 19% turnover percentage range, I think you can be a very good, effective offense and win a lot of games.
And so the questions now are from our community. Glenn asked this. It kind of piggybacks on the turnover question. Glenn says, I read a columnist's conclusion that I use, quote, lack of fundamentals compared to Syracuse is what led to 26 turnovers. Do you see any truth in that? And is it a concern going forward with IU's more free offense? We've had a lot of turnover discussions, so we can answer that one quick. Is it a lack of fundamentals or is it just the zone? Or the pace. We'll just put it down to maybe a multiple choice question there, so we can move on. We've talked a lot about turnovers tonight. Jay, what's the main reason? Is it lack of fundamentals, pace, the defenses we've been playing for Indiana's turnovers?
Yeah, I think that question has some issues. I think if we had a couple Boeheims on the court, they wouldn't say that we lack fundamentals. Take that for what it is, but. I'm gonna leave it at that and say that I don't think it's a lack of fundamentals. I think it was, you know, not playing a road game against that Syracuse zone for the first time.
Andy?
Yeah, I think it was more a function of the zone and getting kind of sped up. I think there were also times that they expected things to be there that weren't, or saw plays that they hoped would be there but just couldn't quite make. And like I said, I think Tony did a good job breaking that down. A couple of the Geronimo ones, you could kind of tell what they had drilled him to look for, and he just kind of looked for it regardless. Even the opening play that Parker Stewart throws the ball away, they had kind of set up a play for it, but it was, I think, that recognition of this might not be there based on the way Syracuse is playing and some of those things. I think that's a little bit more pace than it is fundamentals, at least just in terms of, you know, how the way we were able to react to the way the game was being played and the way the defense was playing it.
So I think it's unanimous. We don't agree with that columnist, Glenn, that it's a lack of fundamentals. It's just maybe more a lack of focus of looking at the right thing and then being tight with the basketball. If that's what the columnist was mentioning as fundamentals, being sure with your passes, well, then maybe you can make that. But fundamental, this team can dribble. This team can pass. I just think their execution and their decision-making against that zone was the issue more than a team not being coached and taught fundamentals of basketball. So we disagree with that columnist. David asks, I guess this is specifically for me, Coach T, during the post-game broadcast on Tuesday night, you said that you were looking for two players across the top of the zone, but we played three. But later in the game, we played four across the top. Actually, they played four across the free throw lane, a tactic that addressed your concern. What is it about two and four across the top that is better? Okay, so here's the basic idea in attacking zones. If it's a 2-3, it's an even front zone that you're playing against. You want to attack with an odd man front. So you're going to have three perimeters around their two defensive perimeters and attack with your two baseline guys against the three on the baseline. Try to get one of those three backline guys to come out and misplay a wing. If it's a 1-3-1 or a one-man front, you tend to generally put two guards across from each other, throw the ball back and forth, and then attack in a variety of ways. I thought if there was a criticism of Coach Woodson, I thought he might have been too slow to change his front. But his idea was to flood the backside early and then to bring the 1-4 high in the first half, and none of that really worked. Then they really cleaned it up in the second half by putting both post players at the elbow and two wings, and that's hard to guard when you're sitting in designated spots in the zone. And I think that's why Indiana found its offense, because of the adjustments of going to the 1-4 across the free throw line. David, so it's all about your preference. There are some coaches that just match up against the zone and then drive it. There are a variety of college coaches that I've seen talk about, it doesn't matter odd front or even front. That's what I was talking about in the post game. It's just match up and have your best player go against their worst defender and drive it. And that's kind of how the game evolves. But odd front, even front, whatever the defense is presenting, the offense usually lines up in some version of the opposite in order to attack a zone. So that's what we're talking about, David. And the final question for tonight, Joel says, is Jay bad luck when he watches IU in person, regardless if it's home or away? Jay, your record at home. We haven't talked about that yet.
Defend yourself is essentially what Coach is asking you to do right now.
It's much better at home, I promise. You know,
you can't handle the truth.
I don't know what it is. God, it's so bad, guys. It's so painful because I want to go see the team play as much as possible. And every time I go, it's like, well, here we go again. you get to the first half of that Syracuse game, you're like, I've seen this movie before. I know how this ends. So, yeah. And then I didn't let myself believe we were gonna actually win until we got up four in the second overtime, and I was like, oh wait, we could actually win this game. And then it all fell apart.
That I gave my kids a bunch of life lessons by going to road football games, and then the walk of shame of walking from the stadium back to your car in opposing colors and getting just lambasted with every kind of vile comment. I think that's the real reason my boys have turned out. It's not anything Mrs. Tonsoni and I have done. So winning on the road is tough, and being a fan on the road is tough as well.
That's it. We're done. No more questions.
All right, Ryan. We hear you. We hear you. We're going to end the show. But if you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of RigsDesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again next week or sooner if any news breaks.
Take it from me, Nick Zeisloft. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. And as always, go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
You might get beat today, but each day you got to get better.
Hey, the show's over. Here I come, Coach Tonsoni.
All right, it's time for me to go.
Let's get the AC after dark going.
It'll be after Coach leaves. That's what it would be. Good show tonight, fellas. Good show.
Yeah, that's it. Moose was asking in the chat what I thought about the officiating in real time. I thought the officials called a different game the last 10 minutes, which I guess isn't really surprising, given that's what college basketball officials like to do. But I thought the first 30 minutes of the game were officiated completely different than the last 10 minutes in overtime. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I guess you just, you know, at a certain point, you just kind of expect that. But it was frustrating to see them battle back. And then, you know, all of our players are getting fouled out, and like I said, I don't think I said it to the group, but that last foul on Parker Stewart happened literally right in front of us. We were in the first row under the basket, and there was no contact, no nothing, and the ref's just anticipating something, I don't know. And that was just a horrible call, and it fouls out Stewart, and I think that got him back. I think we were up two at that point, I'm pretty sure. And that gave him two more free throws, and then, yeah.
Hey, a couple things we didn't mention. The women had a tough defeat tonight against a ranked opponent at home. They're playing a lot of good opponents. And our own, Kathy Amos and Jeff Marlowe, recorded a post-game show. And it wasn't live, but they recorded a post-game show to talk about the women's game tonight. And that it should be loaded in the community tomorrow. If you're a member of the community, go check that out. Kathy and Jeff do a great, great job of supporting all of Indiana athletics, and this edition of a women's show is much needed. We have really good women's basketball program, so if you can give that a listen tomorrow, if you need an excuse for your boss for an extra half an hour lunch, email Coach Tonsoni at tonsonib@delphi. And I will contact your boss and let them know that being part of the community is important, and you need extra time to listen to that post-game show, because I'm here to help you personally, and to heck with productivity. Maybe we need more of it, actually. So, who knows?
Oh, man. Yep.
All right.
Yeah, that game, god damn it. We went out to, like, so we traveled with Galen. I don't know if you guys know Josh James in Bloomington, and then Johnny Jager. And so it was cool talking to Johnny. He had a lot of cool IU basketball stories from his time on the team, because he was overlapped both Crean and Archie. He was there for Crean's last season, and then Archie's time there too, because he was a grad assistant for a couple of years after he graduated. So, someday we'll tell those stories in AC After Dark or something, but there's some really good ones. But we thought we were going to get tickets through the team, and then Syracuse only gave IU 75 tickets. And so, Josh and Johnny had bought tickets in the first row. So, like, the way the dome is, the end zones, the dome are set up, the middle section under the basket extends out like 10 or 15 rows past the section that's right next to it. And so we were in the section right next to it in the first row, but the students were in the middle section standing the whole time. And so we couldn't see unless we stood up. And so we were standing up in the first row. And so all the Syracuse fans behind us were yelling at us the whole time to sit down. And we're like, we can't freaking see the game if we sit down. Like, we didn't come here to watch the game on the big screen. And so they spent the first half, while they were beating us, like, throwing popcorn and balloons at Hillary and I. And if you've ever met Hillary, you know she doesn't take a lot of shit from people. So she told them to go where they could go. They could go have some fun with themselves a few times during that first half. It was just an interesting, because I definitely wouldn't have bought the tickets if I knew that they were. Well, actually, I didn't buy the tickets. Johnny and Josh bought them, but I wouldn't have chosen those tickets if I would have known, what the setup was, and that we were gonna have to stand the whole time and whatever else. But they weren't the nicest bunch.
Well, we're gonna have to find a game where you can go and break your streak.
God, I know. I almost want to go to the Notre Dame game, but I just
no. Not this year, not yet. We gotta find a real
that game. Yeah, that game took on new importance after.
Yeah, we really need that for bracket stuff.
Yeah. Oh god.
So,
man.
Hey, shameless plug: DelphiBracketology.com. New bracket out tomorrow. Andy, when's your new one coming out?
I usually don't do it until after the first year.
You're smart, because, like, there's no information, like, none. But I'm trying to teach 13 members how to evaluate and move teams and compare teams. So we're putting one out no matter what.
Yeah. I usually wait till the 1st of January. I got important stuff to do. I'm writing I'm writing articles for the website for my daughter's high school. I did it during the soccer season for her games, and I'm doing it for her basketball team too. At least when I can go. So I am writing. I am trying to stay sharp, but not doing bracketology.
I hope you negotiated a good fee on that one, Andy.
It's about what you think it would be. So,
you know, working for school sucks because you just don't get any pay whatsoever.
I'm losing money on the transaction because I'm paying for her to play and then not getting anything back on the other end. But oh well, it's fun. They like being able to see their name in print, and they like having stuff up on it.
Andy, I do a podcast for our athletic department every Monday. Interview the coaches, Zoom interview, put out interview athletes and all that. No stipend whatsoever. It's 2 hours of my week every week, and I signed a contract for nil. You'll do this for nil.
Okay. Have you guys settled on a date for the meetup? I assume is it going to be the Illinois game?
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be the Illinois game, although I don't know what Coach and I's availability
is. These two
is
won't
really
be there.
Based on... We may try to figure out where we can be there one of the nights, but I will not be attending the game. I know that. And neither will Coach, I don't believe.
It's a noon game, right?
I think it's noon. So
Yeah.
But I've got multiple games that weekend and whatever. So I'm gonna try to make it over for some portion of the weekend and then probably drive back home. But that is, I'm pretty sure, the set in stone plan at this point, other than kind of what events are surrounding it and who's going to be there when. But that's the game. Jared and Ryan will definitely be there, as far as I know at this point.
Well, I'll host
on Saturday.
Official,
I think you and I might be down Friday night, maybe, right? Just for
we discussed a couple different. We discussed a couple different options. So,
well, I'll host the March Madness Assembly Call meetup at my house, and then. We could all just come here.
There we
watch IU win, you know, its first game in the tournament.
Moose,
now we're talking.
We do play at Tipton this year, I believe. Not this week, but next Friday. I think we play the 11th? To answer your question there.
I'll be heading down for the game on Saturday. Hope to get to town early and either hit up Yogi's or Nick's or something before the game and get some beers and some food in me, and then go watch the first Big Ten game of the season.
Nice. Enjoy.
Have fun.
That's a noon tip as well, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Get back home and watch the football in the afternoon.
There you go. Sounds good.
All righty, gentlemen. I'm going to call it a night. See you, everyone, in the chat mob. Thank you for being here. We'll see you Saturday with some group talk the game. Have a good weekend.
Good to see you, Coach. Good to see you, Andy.
All right, cool. Yeah, you too, Jay. Thanks, everybody.
All right, later, guys.
Yep.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.